You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Leah Carter.
And I'm Don Guerra. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, November 1st, 2016.
Unfortunately, it's been pretty much just a storm of issues, and really the issues that come to the surface and get printed in the paper are not that these people are nice people trying to get along, which the majority really are.
Three candidates for Monroe County Auditor discuss the office's history of turbulence and embezzlement. That's later in the show, a WFHB candidate forum.
Also coming up in the next half hour, the ins and outs of money, our weekly segment providing economic education and community resources that keep your budget balanced and your finances flourishing. But first, these local headlines.
The fate of the Players Pub Bar is expected to be announced this evening around 8 p.m. The bar and music venue closed yesterday and placed a sign in front of its door reading, quote, "The pub has closed. Truth, love, joy," unquote. One of the co-owners of the business, Joe Esteville, who is also a longtime WFHB volunteer, stopped by the WFHB newsroom this afternoon. Esteville said he couldn't give many details, but he said he expects to announce a decision tonight about whether the bar and music venue will be permanently closed. In the meantime, a GoFundMe site has been established to raise funds to save the pub. The campaign has a $55,000 goal. The owners have not made a public statement about exactly why they might be closing. The pub is hosting what may be its final blues jam tonight, beginning at 8 p.m.
A professor emeritus of economics at IUPUI Fort Wayne recently completed an Economic Policy Institute study that concludes Indiana's right-to-work law hurts the state's economy. In an article released by the Greater Fort Wayne Business Weekly, Professor David Diltz states that a nationwide decline of unionization during the past three decades has reduced wages for the country's non-union workers. Strong unions set increasing wages and benefit standards that non-union shops follow in competition for labor. Unions also offer training programs which increase the pool of skilled labor. The percentage of male Hoosier workers in unions fell to 11% in 2013, from 34% in 1979. And according to the study, there has been a ripple effect that lowered non-union wages approximately 8%. All this creates skilled labor shortages in states with right-to-work laws, which limit the rights of unions to charge for their services. A similar right-to-work law was passed in 1957, but repealed in 1965. The state's current right-to-work law was passed in 2012. Dilt's study finds that right-to-work states lose industry and manufacturing, but he says, quote, "I think the people in this state will do what they normally do and wake up and smell the roses. I think people are smart enough, they'll see they're being handed a bill of goods," unquote.
A Warsaw teen who was sentenced to 25 years in prison for helping to kill a friend's stepfather when he was 12 years old may be released in a few months. Paul Gingrich, now 18 years old, is the youngest Indiana youth ever to be charged as an adult. He was resentenced last week under what is known as Paul's Law, a law which was named for him and allows juveniles charged for serious crimes to receive alternative sentencing. Paul will likely be released in 90 days following consistent good behavior and participation in a community transition program. If he is released then, he'll be subject to 1 year of home detention and 10 years of probation. The boys had planned at the time of the murder to run away after killing the friend's stepfather.
A judge is set to hear a challenge to the Religious Freedom Restoration Act this week. Specifically, conservative groups are challenging a so-called fix that was passed to address public backlash against the law. The fix prevented RFRA from being used to overrule local anti-discrimination ordinances like those on the books in Carmel, Indianapolis, and Bloomington. The Indiana Family Institute and the American Family Association of Indiana filed the lawsuit last December seeking to have the fix thrown out and RFRA restored to its original form. These same groups lobbied heavily for the passage of RFRA, and representatives of both groups were present at the closed private ceremony where the bill was signed. The lawsuit was initially filed against the cities of Indianapolis and Carmel, but Bloomington and Columbus were added later. Assistant City Attorney Thomas Cameron is currently tasked with defending Bloomington's ordinance in court. The groups contend that local non-discrimination laws place an undue burden on their free exercise of religion and want to restore the protection for exclusionary practices that was present in the original RFRA bill. City of Bloomington Director of Human Rights, Barbara McKinney, was reluctant to comment on ongoing litigation, but she did say that with the exception of this lawsuit, nobody has accused the city of Bloomington's non-discrimination ordinance of interfering with religious expression.
All I can tell you is we've never had anyone argue that in the way that the Bloomington Human Rights Ordinance is applied. Religion is a protected category as well, and sometimes you do have to balance interests and work out the fairest situation you can, but no one has ever accused us of interfering with religious rights under our ordinance.
The cities named in the lawsuit have challenged the standing of the plaintiffs. The groups are posing what is called a pre-enforcement challenge, which means they're disputing the law based on the hypothetical possibility of being the target of an enforcement action under the city's human rights laws. The cities say that not only have none of the plaintiffs been actively targeted for discriminatory practices, in most cases they fall under exemptions to the ordinances or are not even conducting any activities in the cities the case is targeting. Bloomington's ordinance has several exemptions, including very small businesses and private functions, and Barbara McKinney says none of these groups have come into conflict with the ordinance.
If you have fewer than 6 employees, you're not covered by the Bloomington Human Rights Ordinance. I'm not sure the numbers are the same in all 4 cities, but in Bloomington, if you have fewer than 6, you're not covered by the ordinance. So if you're a mom-and-pop business and you just want to hire your relatives or friends or whatever, you cannot be charged with discrimination under the ordinance for not hiring people outside of your close circle. You can do that legally. Whether that's good or not, that's a different question, but you can legally. It only applies to public accommodation. So I'm not required to allow you to come into my wedding or something like that. If I want to keep out people of a certain group from my wedding, that's not a public accommodation, and I could do that, certainly. They have not, as far as I know, ever had a program or event in Bloomington that could possibly be subject to the ordinance.
The first hearing before a judge is set to take place Wednesday morning in Hamilton County Superior Court. The presiding judge in the case is Stephen Nation. The first hearing was originally scheduled for August, but was bumped due to a scheduling conflict with another case. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Leah Carter.
And I'm Don Guerra. The Monroe County Auditor's Office has been plagued by scandal for years. Most recently, former auditor Steve Salter was charged with fraud and official misconduct for misusing county credit cards. Salter allegedly used the county's money to make personal purchases at Kroger, Walmart, and Marsh. Salter stepped down from the position over the summer. Now there are 3 candidates seeking to take his old job. Teresa Chambers is the interim auditor who took over after Salter resigned. Kathy Smith is the current county treasurer, and Ann Bohm is a self-employed accountant who once worked as a financial claims representative in the auditor's office. All 3 candidates sat down for a conversation with WFHB reporter Jared Dill. We bring you a portion of their conversation now for today's WFHB Community Report.
The auditor's office has somewhat of a rocky history over the last couple years. Steve Salter recently resigned under investigation for misuse of county credit cards, and his predecessor, Amy Gerstmann, was convicted a couple of years ago also for misusing county credit cards. So for our first question, what is wrong with the office now, and what do you plan on doing differently? And Ann Bohm, let's start with you.
Okay. Some of the things I saw in the office is it seems that there probably needs to be a realignment of duties. While some people were, seem to get their job done with plenty of time and have time for other things or take time off of work, other people were overworked, overwhelmed, I myself, in the claims position, found not enough time to do the job. I was constantly working through lunches or staying late. I took one day off one time, came back to a mess of reports on my desk because my backup couldn't remember what to do with them or where they went. You know, that just tells you, right, there's something's wrong. It's not functioning properly. And when you don't have enough people that are cross-trained to help out in other positions, that is one thing definitely right there. I think there also needs to be policy manuals for each position in the office so that if somebody does need to step in, at least they have reference to do so. I also would like to see student interns utilized. It would be a one way to save the county money and get students involved in local government. So it's just another idea I have for my platform. That's about it.
Teresa Chambers, you are the current interim auditor. So what would you do differently with the office?
So far, since becoming auditor at the end of July, I have started implementing cross-training that is much needed in the office, as well as new control procedures for internal control. Those being cross-checking of reports, checks on the financial side of the office. As far as Mr. Salter and Ms. Gerstmann, they are individuals that made their own choices and decisions. My staff and I have been the ones there holding the office together. So moving forward, working with the State Board of Accounts, making sure that we implement the rules and regulations that the state mandates is what I first and foremost am going for if I'm elected, and I've already started doing that process since becoming auditor at the end of July.
And Kathy Smith, how about the ethics question?
Well, first of all, that's a great question. And I see the number one issue with the office, outside of the stealing, because that doesn't, you know, that's no one anything to do with me or my people, is basically is employee turnover. Anytime there's employee turnover, that is hard on the treasurer's office, and it becomes a systemic problem. And that's really what the issue is. When I worked in the auditor's office, over 8 years ago, there was two sets of eyes on everything, as there are in my office now. And the reason why that's important is, for instance, we've received checks that have had the wrong check numbers on them, where they've been put on the wrong check stock. We've had checks cut from the wrong account. All those are simple errors that affect the bookkeeping on the treasurer side immensely. And then people point fingers at me why I can't bounce to the bank, but I can't bounce the auditor's records, which is what I bounce to the bank. Not that the mistakes are big mistakes, but they don't add up. There's inequity in the numbers or the size of scalar quantities, and everything has to match up to do anything electronically. In this day and age, things should be able, accounting should be able to be fed into the bank and through the accounting system, and all the things picked out that match. And then anything that falls out is what you work together on. So the issue really has been there's not been two sets of eyes on things due to the turnover. Now, I don't want to pick on anybody specifically, but that, no matter who, all three ladies here, I think we're all nice people, kind people, we all care about this county. One of us will be the next auditor, whoever gets elected, me or either of them. We've really got to let the public know that it's service oriented. We are here to serve them, and we have to mitigate the turnover, be good to each other, be good to the new treasurer, and treat everyone with respect and dignity, taxpayer and internal customers in the county.
We've kind of glanced off the topic a couple of times now of the relationship between the treasurer's office and the auditor's office. And of course, for the whole county government system to function smoothly, the two offices need to be able to work and communicate with each other. So we currently have both sides of that relationship with us today. So Teresa Chambers, I'd like to start with any thoughts you have about the history of the relationship between the treasurer and the auditor and what we should do moving forward.
It's been a rocky situation between the auditor and treasurer in the years that I've been there. Ms. Gerstmann and Mrs. Smith never got along. At times, Mr. Salter and Ms. Smith got along. So I think that in order to give the taxpayers what they deserve, it does need to be a calm environment that is working together and not against one another in order to make sure that we are doing the best for the taxpayers of the county.
Kathy Smith, provided you win, you will be on the other side of this relationship from where you've been in the past. So what are your thoughts on moving forward?
Well, yes, it would actually be a return to the auditor's office for me. And even prior to 12 years ago when I started in the auditor's office, there was a Republican auditor and a Republican treasurer, and they didn't speak to each other, and they wouldn't go in each other's office or let their employees go in each other's office, which I just think is just absolutely wrong. I can remember my first day in the auditor's office asking the treasurer's chief deputy, which was my counterpart, could they help us get our phones while we had a little employee meeting on the very first day and introduce ourselves. And she was like, absolutely not. We don't do things like that here. And that sort of has set up the tone of the 12 years I've been here. It's been kind of a rocky ride, for sure. But I'm one of those people, I'm pretty much easy to get along with. And I was very nice to Amy. She worked for me before, and I've had her at my house at Thanksgiving. Everything was fine until she became auditor. And then the distance actually started then, including, it's hard to be the opposite side of the coin when the person, she months and months, she didn't even come into work. You know, she never took my phone call. She never answered my emails. You know, there's a point where you keep trying and trying and trying. And I'm pretty, I have 9 brothers. I'm pretty diplomatic. You just kind of give up, and I don't want to do that. You know, I really tried working hard with Steve because I gave Steve the benefit of the doubt. You know, he worked under Amy, and I didn't want to hold that against him. But I want us all to get along. It is not about me. It is not about the people who work for me. It is about the taxpayers and their money and doing the right thing for the right reasons, which is good public service, internal and external, and doing things at the lowest cost. One of the things I focus on is trying to do things at the lowest cost. There was some issue with me spending the night in Indianapolis one night during a snowstorm because we were up there going to a conference. Well, the day before, we went to the bank, all day long, had an all-day meeting at the bank. And then of course, it's wintertime, and it's snow on the ground really bad. So driving back and forth is dangerous when it's just cheaper to stay there. And so there was issues associated with that that commissioners brought up. But the truth of the matter is that one meeting has saved $30,000 a year for the last 3 years. So that's a savings of $90,000. In addition to that, I printed my own tax bills for a long time. You know, that's, $50,000 a year. I have been focused on saving money and trying to do the right thing and trying to get along with everyone. Unfortunately, it's been pretty much just a storm of issues. And really, the issues that come into the surface and get printed in the paper that people talk about are not that these people are nice people trying to get along, which the majority really are. And so I want to, leave the listeners with the thought that there are a lot of very, very good, kind, genuine people that work at the county that care about the taxpayers.
Ann Boehm, a lot of room for improvement if you do happen to win. So what do you have in mind?
Yes. Working there last year, I never had a problem with the treasurer's office. I always felt completely welcome to go over there and talk to Linda or Kathy or Christina, Juan, Hans, all of them. I had no issues with any of them, but it was clear my office did. There were whispers constantly in the office. There was gossip. I was told to be careful who I trusted. I was told by somebody on the other side, somebody was out to get me fired. That's not the behavior of professionals, and it certainly doesn't belong in our county government. I have no problem getting along with anybody. I can make friends with anybody, and I will always. But the point is, too, is anytime you take a job, you should be giving 110%. And that means being a professional and getting along with your employees no matter what. You're there to get a job done. You're really not there to make friends. If you do along the way, that's great. And everyone should be, kind and supportive, of course. But it's about, at the end of the day, getting the job done, getting it done correctly, and being supportive and working together for the common good. So I really would be excited to be in there, because no matter who's elected on the treasurer's side, I don't think that's going to be an issue at all.
That was Republican Ann Boehm, Democrat Kathy Smith, and Independent candidate Teresa Chambers, speaking with WFHB reporter Jared Dill. The candidates are running for Monroe County Auditor this year. You can hear a full version of that conversation tomorrow at 6 p.m. on our weekly lecture series, Standing Room Only.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Support also comes from Growing Opportunities, a social business project of the South Central Community Action Program. Growing Opportunities is an urban hydroponic farm that produces job training opportunities for low-income people with barriers to employment, especially people with disabilities. They grow produce that is sold to local eateries, supermarkets, hospitals, and schools. Information available at 812-332-2168 or online at insccap.org.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly financial segment, The Ins and Outs of Money.
It's The Ins and Outs of Money, presented by the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. Quick tips for getting control of your money, no matter how big or small your income or family is.
Hello, and welcome to The Ins and Outs of Money. I'm Christina with the It's Your Money Project. Joke all you want about lawyers. There are times when you need an attorney and you'll need to know how to find the best one you can afford. Perhaps you're involved in a criminal matter or an accident, or maybe you want to file a lawsuit or defend yourself in a lawsuit, and time is of the essence to gather evidence and put your case together. Or let's say you need to settle child support issues, file for divorce or bankruptcy, or you simply need a business contract or a will drawn up. Hiring a lawyer in these cases can save you a lot of time and hassle in the present and in the future. Simply put, if there are laws that govern your circumstances at all, you'll benefit from an attorney who can help you to understand your rights, interpret and explain the legal dimensions in your case, handle documents, and advise you throughout the process. What kind of attorney will you need? Well, there are lots of different types of lawyer, but the two big categories are those who handle civil cases and those who handle criminal cases. Civil cases are, for example, lawsuits, where two people in each case are either people or companies involved in some kind of disputes, and judgments are usually awarded in the form of money one party must pay the other. Criminal cases, on the other hand, are cases where the government accuses a person or a company of violating a local, state, or federal law, and the punishment, if there is one, usually involves a fine or jail time. Now, as of 2015, there are currently about 15,000 practicing lawyers in the state of Indiana. How do you find the best one for you? The easiest way is to ask for recommendations from people you know. The attorney of a trusted family member, friend, or colleague can often refer you to a lawyer who specializes in your area of concern, but you may need to go a bit deeper in your search. Before you meet with any lawyers, do some comparison shopping. You can make a list of several attorneys you find in places like the Monroe County Bar Association's website or in the phone book. Call attorneys and ask questions like how much experience they have in cases such as yours, if they would be handling your case personally, and how long they've been practicing the law. It's also good to ask if they would be willing to meet you free of charge before you decide to hire them, and if not, how much their fee is for an initial meeting. When talking to any lawyers, remember that you're probably feeling vulnerable and that there are very strict rules regarding solicitation of clients by lawyers, so if you feel pressured or hounded by an attorney to let them take your case, this could be a red flag. It could also be illegal. And be especially wary of an attorney who guarantees results. Nothing is a sure thing in matters of law. And telling you there is could be a sign of less than shining ethics on that lawyer's part. And then there's the cost. If you're worried about being able to afford a lawyer, you do have some options. First, you can sometimes get limited representation in your case, which means that your lawyer helps you for only very specific and certain tasks you agree upon. Generally, limited representation involves less costs since less work is required on the part of the attorney. But whether you're getting limited or full representation from your attorney, legal costs usually break down into fixed, hourly, retainer, contingency, or statutory fees. Got all those? Okay, here's a rundown. A fixed fee, sometimes called a standard fee, is commonly used in routine matters like uncontested divorces. Before agreeing to a fixed fee, you should be sure to find out exactly what is included in that cost. Next is the hourly fee. Some lawyers charge by the hour, and the amount can vary from lawyer to lawyer. Ask for an estimate of the amount of time your case will take, but remember that circumstances may change and your case could take longer than the initial estimation. Then there's the retainer fee. The term retainer can mean different things. Sometimes it's a fee you pay to guarantee your lawyer will be available to work on your case as needed, kind of putting them on call for a certain period of time and for certain types of work, even if they have to turn down other cases in order to remain available to you. But retainer can also just be a term used to mean a down payment for the work about to be done. Be certain you get clarity when you hear the word retainer. Next, contingency fees, which are commonly used in lawsuits. They're called contingencies because they're contingent on, they depend on, how much money clients are awarded in a civil court case. Often with this type of payment agreement, if you lose your case, you won't pay anything or very little in legal fees. But again, make sure you have everything spelled out in writing before signing on. The last type of payment is a statutory fee. Basically, the law or statute has already determined what the case can cost you. If you can't afford any of these options, there are a number of free services available to residents of Indiana depending on where they live and what kind of case they have. Here in Monroe County, for instance, Indiana Legal Services, or ILS in Bloomington, may be an option for civil cases. You can find more options on the library's website at mcpl.info/legal. Next time you hear a lawyer joke, remember this one. How is legal help like air? Answer, you never think about it until you need it. By knowing what to expect when looking for an attorney and asking for clarification on anything you don't understand, you can save yourself time and energy and money in legal fees.
The Ins and Outs of Money is part of the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. It's produced by Ryan Stacey at Level Up, the Digital Creativity Center at the library. Executive producer is Joe Crawford, and Christina Wilty is our associate producer and sound editor. Music courtesy of Flannelgraph Records. Tools for taking control of your money can be found at money.mcpl.info. That's money.mcpl, as in Monroe County Public Library, .info.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Joe Crawford, Jared Dill, and Kathy Norton. Our feature was produced by Jared Dill and edited by Joe Crawford.
The Ins and Outs of Money is produced by Ryan Stacey and associate producer Christina Wiltsy. It's part of the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. Our engineer is Rob Schoon. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Leah Carter.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington Community Radio's longest-running public affairs program, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.